You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Cherished the Methodist Church because it gave us the great gift of personal salvation, but the great obligation of social gospel.
That's Hillary Clinton during the campaign last year. She has been very open about her Christian faith. How is it that, well, depending on your political leanings, perhaps, you either find that to be irrelevant and embarrassing, or you are skeptical of whether or not she is what she says she is, a member of the United Methodist Church? In a recent Atlantic article, a lengthy one by Emma Green, titled "Hillary Wants to Preach, Religion is Playing a Big Role in Clinton's Post-Election Tour, What Does She Have to Gain from Sharing Her Faith Now?" Some even speculating that she might pursue the path toward the public ministry in the United Methodist Church. Joining us to answer that question and others, Dr. Paul Kengor. He's professor of political science at Grove City College, and he's author of several books, including God and Hillary Clinton, A Spiritual Life. Dr. Kengor, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. Good to be with you again.
Would you be surprised if Senator and former Secretary of State, presidential candidate in 2016, Hillary Clinton, took on this last stage of her life to become a United Methodist pastor?
Well, Todd, I guess I should say that nothing about the Clintons would ever surprise me, right? But, I'd be surprised at that one. I don't expect it to happen. And I would say for the main reason that, you know, you and I both understand, you being in the Lutheran tradition, me in the Catholic tradition, and actually I'm a Catholic convert. I had been in a Presbyterian USA church before that. And Hillary's a Methodist. I mean, you know, to become a pastor for her, I mean, she'd basically have to go to seminary. So it's not just a matter of, you know, if she was in maybe, you know, a non-denominational independent church, she could, you know, it might be a lot easier to become her own pastor of her own church. But there's too much of a process, I think, for this. I don't think she would undertake that. And, you know, the reason we're talking about this, of course, is the recent article that suggested that she might. But if you look at the words carefully of the source for that, and it's a pastor by the name of Bill Shillady, who's the pastor of the Park Avenue United Methodist Church in the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And he talked to Hillary, and he knows Hillary, knows her very well spiritually. And, you know, and again, she's a member of the United Methodist Church. And I guess, Todd, that she had told him, as he put it almost offhandedly, she said, "Bill, I think I'd like to do some preaching." And he said to her, "Oh, really? Are you serious?" And she said, "Yes, I am." But he added, he said that, in fact, the article that I have from McClatchy News Service, it says that at 69 years old, Clinton is not interested in attending seminary or becoming an ordained minister, Shillady said, but in the Methodist tradition, the laity have been known to take the pulpit. So I think really there, Todd, I think that's what's going on, is she's interested in doing some preaching, but, you know, that doesn't mean that she's going to do that in the formal role of an actual Methodist pastor.
So it's not for a lack of interest in matters theological or spiritual, but probably simply because for a woman as accomplished as she is, the process of kind of starting from ground zero at seminary as a first-year seminarian probably doesn't appeal as much.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, we know of people kind of later in life have gone into ministry. And, you know, people who retired from their regular profession, or I don't know if I'm going to call politics a vocation, but in a way, you can see that maybe if she's put everything else behind her, and if she's kind of written off politics for good, that maybe she might be open to something like that. But I don't see any indication of it. So I think, from what I could tell, Todd, it was more a matter of this Bill Schility, I hope I'm saying his name right, I hadn't heard of him before I read the article, of him having a conversation with her and her saying that she was interested in doing some preaching. And so, you know, the word preaching then got taken by people in kind of an exaggerated hyperbole, right, manner, and people went a little bit hysterical with it and said that, kind of interpreted that to mean as she wanted to become an ordained minister. And I think I don't think that's a proper interpretation of what Schility said that she said.
Has she in her past expressed interest in public ministry?
Look, she's always been a devoted Methodist. You know, she used to call herself an old-fashioned Methodist. In fact, she said that in the 1990s. She said that in the early 2000s. I haven't heard her say that recently, and I think part of it might be that the Methodist Church, which has always been pretty liberal, for example, on the abortion issue, arguably pro-choice, in fact, favoring legal abortion. Well, they've recently changed on that. In fact, they meet every 4 years, the UMC General Assembly. It's usually every 4 years in April. And the most recent that they got together, they gave the strongest pro-life, anti-abortion position statement that they have in at least 10 years. And so the denomination now is to the right of her on the abortion issue. And while they're a little bit liberal on some so-called gay issues, quote-unquote, they haven't done same-sex marriage, and she's now in favor of same-sex marriage. So I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into this too much, but I think she's probably less willing to call herself an old-fashioned Methodist, because she's clearly not an old-fashioned Methodist. She's more of a liberal, modern-day social justice Methodist who ignores, you know, kind of cafeteria Methodist, right? She picks and chooses the things that she wants to focus on and what she doesn't. But the closest that she's gotten to any sort of public ministry sort of duties, she's done, I can't really say she's done any preaching from the pulpit, but she has been involved in like Sunday school classes and so forth. Even the church that she attended in Arkansas, in Little Rock back in the 1980s, she was part of a Bible study group that had a regular rotation of leaders for the Bible study. And so sometimes she would lead the Bible study. And I can't say that was any more than once a month. I doubt it was. It was probably only a handful of times per year. But that's about the closest that she's ever gotten to any sort of public, quote-unquote, preaching where she had somewhat of an audience.
Why are so many Americans either ignorant of, or if they aren't, skeptical of her spirituality and her long-held Methodist faith?
Well, I could give you kind of a personal answer to that. I wrote a book called God and Hillary Clinton, and it sold hardly any copies, which is probably the worst-selling book that I ever wrote, and I've done over a dozen. And we used to, the publicist used to joke, he used to say that we got caught between conservatives who don't believe that she believes in God and liberals who don't care that she believes in God. So maybe in a sense that's in part an answer to the question. The people that would, you know, normally you think applaud her for that, liberals, have become incredibly secular. The Democratic Party has become, I think, very tragically secular. You know, the more religious party has become the Republican Party. It's a shame that that's happened with one particular party, but it has. And Republicans don't like her. Conservatives don't like her. So any idea of Hillary being faithful, they scoff at it, and they're like, oh, yeah, right. You know. And then liberals, on the other hand, any talk of her being faithful, they're just not real interested in it. So I think because of that, there hasn't been much of a focus on it. In fact, this will give you even a further idea from a personal standpoint relating to my book. It's kind of amazing if you think about it. I had a handful of people, and I mean like a handful, like five people, over the past few years who said to me, "Hey, your book, God and Hillary Clinton, came out like 10 years ago. Boy, I bet the publisher is gearing up to do a big print run for when she runs for president." Actually, no. They didn't even bother reprinting it. You think, oh, yeah, they're going to put 20,000 copies out then Barnes & Noble to sell them all when she runs for president. No, I emailed the publicist. And this is HarperCollins. It's a great publishing house. Begging them. I said, you guys like me to do a revised edition? I'd be happy to do one for you. No one was interested. No one thought anyone had any interest in her faith. So, that seems to be the case. So no one is really all that interested in her faith, except when this story broke recently and, you know, being reported that she might be interested in becoming a preacher, and then a lot of people jumped at the chance to make fun of it. But other than that, really, I haven't seen much public interest.
In that sense, in the context of the Democratic Party, is Hillary Clinton a throwback to an earlier era because she remains devoutly connected to the denomination for a lifetime?
Yeah, maybe so. And I mean, she is close to 70 years old, right? I think she is 70. No, she's older, I believe. In that sense, it's kind of part of her generation. But you even have a lot of, I mean, there are still Democrats in the party about that age in Congress. I think of, you know, Nancy Pelosi, who, from what I'm told, is a pretty faithful mass goer as a Roman Catholic. But if you ask her what she actually believes, it certainly on the social moral issues, she doesn't line up at all with the church on that. I'd say she's more of a throwback in the sense in that Democrats who run for office in the last 20, 30, 40 years have all been members of a church and are usually members of a mainline denomination. But I could really see here, Todd, very easily the next 4, 8 years, 12 years, the Democrats nominating a person who does not have any religious affiliation. And if that seems like a stretch, well, Bernie Sanders, who came in second to Hillary and came pretty close to Hillary. He got 13 million votes in the Democratic primary. Donald Trump got 14 million, which was a record for Republicans in the primary, a record 14 million. Bernie was right behind him with 13 million. Bernie wasn't far behind Hillary. So to the Democrats, I think Hillary got 17 million. But Bernie has no religious affiliation at all. He's Jewish in terms of ethnicity and upbringing, but not in terms of religious affiliation. And I think the Democrats almost easily nominated him. So I could see the party 4 years from now picking somebody with no religious affiliation who might be agnostic or even atheist. And that's something that would have been inconceivable 20, 30, 40 years ago for the Democratic Party or for either major party in America.
Dr. Paul Kengor is our guest. We're answering the question, will Hillary Clinton become a pastor when we come back? That skepticism and that apathy about her faith, is it because many believe it has no impact on her positions and her ideas?
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armed forces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armed forces.
¿Por qué hay cuatro evangelios? ¿Qué pasa con los bebés que mueren antes de nacer? ¿Qué significa temer a Dios? Respuestas bíblicas a preguntas difíciles se encuentran en la edición de agosto de The Lutheran Witness, una revista de la Iglesia Luterana, Sínodo de Missouri. Visite a cph.org/trylutheranwitness para una oferta especial, 6 ediciones para $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpretando a un mundo contemporáneo desde una perspectiva cristiana.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Religious liberty is an issue I think that we as Christians need to get out in front of.
Mark Hemingway talking about his joint presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Whether it's willful or simple ignorance, the media have badly misrepresented this issue. It is also vital that all Americans understand just how foundational religious liberty and freedom of conscience are to the preservation of all American freedoms. And this is something that even those Americans who aren't religious should understand and agree with. I also happen to believe that we as Lutherans, with our understanding of Two Kingdoms theology, are in an excellent position to be the explainers and ambassadors of this issue.
You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway making the case for religious liberty at the Fall Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. Child care is free. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
The way that we solve questions in America is not through marching around punching at things. Well, I guess that's not the way we should solve things.
The real problem here is the way she cherry picks the text. It reminds me of that game we used to play as kids. What does that cloud look like that you see up there? You know, and somebody thinks it looks like Abraham Lincoln and somebody else thinks it looks like George Washington. And
if the past is anything to go by, I would not be terribly surprised if the 500th retrenches this idea that the Reformation was important for all sorts of reasons, very few of which have to do with the gospel.
It's Jesus and Jesus alone that saves us from sin, that saves us from death, and that saves us from hell. The Reformation was all about the sufficiency of Christ's work.
In an hour from now, we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. You hear just a brief snippet of each one of our 4 soundbites that we'll play for you in their entirety when we play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. And you can vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, by sending us a tweet at issuesetc, an email talkback@issuesetc.org, or giving us a call 1-877-623-6943. In the meantime, we're answering the question, will Hillary Clinton become a pastor? She's expressed a desire to preach. Dr. Paul Kengore is our guest, author of several books, including God and Hillary Clinton, A Spiritual Life. Dr. Kengore, you spoke earlier about the skepticism and the apathy that people have variously over Hillary Clinton's faith. I'm going to play the kind of the skeptic here and say, well, the reason that people are skeptical is because it doesn't seem to have an impact on her positions and her ideas in public life. Is that true? Is her faith with little impact in her public life and positions?
Yeah, I would say that, boy, how would she answer it? And how would she answer it honestly? She would probably, in fact, I know she would say this, she would answer in the way that a Barack Obama would, in the way that, again, a Nancy Pelosi would, where they would just kind of give you a big, giant grin and say, oh, yes, my faith is very important to me. That's why I help the poor, right? That's why I care about the environment. And, you know, Barack Obama, you know, saying, well, yeah, of course I support same-sex marriage as a Christian. After all, I support the Golden Rule. And the Golden Rule says, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. And this is all about love. And you know, Nancy Pelosi said the exact same thing about her faith in same-sex marriage. It's like, wait a second, the Catechism of the Catholic Church says this is disordered and fundamentally wrong, and you can't possibly do this. She said, but my faith says to love, right? So we love. So therefore, they love. So of course I support same-sex marriage. So that I think you know, Hillary would probably do that, right? She would apply it selectively, not on issues like abortion or marriage, but she would say, oh, yeah, I'm a faithful Methodist. That's why I want to help the poor. I'm a faithful Methodist. That's why I want national health care for everybody. So that, yeah, that's how they go about it.
I note that a recent occupant of the White House, George W. Bush, is also at least on paper, a member of the United Methodist Church. How do you explain the difference between the positions of those two people, Hillary Clinton, United Methodist, and George W. Bush, United Methodist, in the same religious tradition with such divergent political beliefs?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I speak with a lot of authority on this because before I wrote God and Hillary Clinton, I wrote God and George W. Bush. And I used to get questions all the time from liberals who would say, well, Bush, you know, believe in Christian. Okay, fundamentalist. Right, and I'd say you guys don't know anything about faith. I'd say you know he's not a fundamentalist; he's a Methodist of all things. But he is Bush is much more a and you'll know this as somebody who understands American religion well. Bush is very much a Southern Methodist, right? He's very much a Texas Methodist, and that's totally different from a Northeast Methodist, which is really what Hillary is. I mean, Hillary is really kind of a Wellesley, or Wellesley close to Wesleyan, but very much Wellesley, Massachusetts Methodist. She grew up in the Park Ridge United Methodist Church in Park Ridge, Illinois, which is a liberal, wealthy suburb of Chicago. So she's kind of Northeastern Methodist, and Bush is kind of Southwestern, and those are two very different worlds. I think there's probably still more Methodist churches than almost any other church in Texas to this day, although I imagine evangelical non-independent churches have probably surpassed that. So it just has to do, I think, with just how broad the American Methodist Church is. That somebody like a George W. Bush can be in it, and she could be in it too. And I've never really felt that George W. Bush made a very good Methodist, especially compared to the national denomination. But he is he's very much a Texas Methodist, which is very much different from where she stands as more of a Northeastern Methodist.
Since, as you said, many were reading the anecdotal account of Hillary saying she'd like to do some preaching as a desire to enter the public ministry in the United Methodist Church. Has she ever, to your knowledge, expressed any qualms of conscience about female pastors, women occupying the pulpit?
That's a good question. I don't think so. One of the quotes that I used to cite a lot on Hillary and the Methodist Church, she kind of glowed and she said, "I am so comfortable in this church." And you know, that statement was made about 10 years ago, long before same-sex marriage was an issue, so she hadn't switched yet. She still supported traditional marriage, so she was in lockstep with her church on that. She was pro-choice, still is, and the church at that point, I think, I would say pretty much was pro-choice. It was real big on social justice, and they had female pastors. So for all those reasons, yeah, I could see why she was so comfortable in the church. And I don't think she ever would have any qualms on that, which I think circles back to your original point at the start of this conversation, Todd. Could we conceive of her becoming a Methodist minister? Well, it's hard for me to imagine it, but you know the possibility is there. It's not denied her, especially as a woman. So if she wanted to take that step as a woman, she could take that step in the United Methodist Church.
If she were to preach, and that still remains a possibility, at least according to what the news is, and she'd probably be welcome in any United Methodist Church I can think of to take the pulpit.
Right.
What do you think her preaching would be like? What would be the major message or theme?
Yeah, that's a great question. It'd probably be a lot of social justice, probably a lot of tolerance stuff, probably apply to like modern LGBTQ ideas. In fact, let me give you an example of that. Her most recent Methodist church is Foundry United Methodist Church, which is the Methodist church in Washington, D.C. I was there the week after the Obergefell decision in late June 2015. I was speaking across the street at the Institute of World Politics, and I did not know that the church was there. In fact, I walked out the front door of Institute of World Politics. I had one of my students, Mark, with me, and I looked across the street, and I saw the largest rainbow flag I've ever seen in my life draped across a church building. And I said to him, I said, "Look at that." And he said, oh, yeah, that's Foundry United Methodist Church. He said, they're very liberal. And I said, well, that's Hillary Clinton's church. He said, oh, yeah. He said, that's right. I've heard that. And that would be the kind of place where she'd probably be invited. In fact, here's another indicator. What her pastor there, Philip Wogeman, who's very liberal, nationally known United Methodist Church guy, they had preach from the pulpit in that church, a Methodist by the name of Harry Blackmun, who was the author of Roe v. Wade. So Foundry United Methodist Church opened its doors and turned over the pulpit to the author of Roe v. Wade, Harry Blackmun, who preached, who gave a talk from the pulpit of Foundry United Methodist Church on a Sunday. And I know a group of conservative Washington Methodists who've been trying to bring the United Methodist Church back to orthodoxy. They protested Blackmun's appearance and invitation at the church, and Wogeman denounced them and said, what a tragedy! What a tragedy! The tragedy being not that he was turning over his pulpit to the author of Roe v. Wade, which led to over 50 million abortions, but the tragedy being the audacity of these incredibly rude Methodists who would dare object to turning over the pulpit to the author of Roe v. Wade. What a tragedy! So I could see Hillary walking into a church like that and giving some sort of social justice talk on anything from tolerance to helping the poor to national health care to loving gay and transgender people. Maybe not necessarily abortion. We'll leave that to the author of Roe v. Wade, after all. Something more along the lines of the former.
Dr. Paul Kangor is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about Hillary Clinton and her spiritual aspirations. When we come back, how does she explain her shift on marriage? Pastor Paul Kane of the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education with a prayer for classical Lutheran schools and homeschools.
O Lord, your word is our great heritage from generation to generation. You have given it to call us to repentance, to bring us to faith, to edify, and to instruct. Bless the educators and scholars of the homeschools and schools of our land, especially those of your church, that all the baptized may be equipped for effective service in the world and catechized for everlasting life. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
The Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education promotes, establishes, and equips individuals and schools committed to confessional Lutheran doctrine and a classical approach to education. Learn more at ccle.org, ccle.org, the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
People are talking about the Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Lutheran FCU was created solely to serve LCMS workers, families, and entities, and proceeds benefit LCMS organizations. Lutheran FCU offers deposit accounts and loans and has service access at thousands of branches and ATMs nationwide. Lutheran FCU also offers members Christian-based lending advice for new loans and refinancing, minimal account fees, and superior personalized service. Check them out at LutheranFCU.org.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. on this Friday, August the 25th. We're talking with Dr. Paul Kangor, professor of political science at Grove City College and author of the book God and Hillary Clinton, A Spiritual Life, about Hillary Clinton's spiritual prospects after the presidential election. You had mentioned before her shift on marriage, in particular her advocacy now for same-sex marriage. How would she explain that, given her history of being a vocal supporter for natural marriage in the past? How she would explain that in terms of her departure from her church's teaching?
Yeah, it's a great question. I watched it very carefully for a long time, and I used to surprise conservative Christians who'd say, "You wrote a book on the faith of Hillary Clinton." Well, how could that be? And I'd say, well, let me tell you a couple of interesting things. And one, I pointed out that she was a staunch advocate of religious freedom. She even co-sponsored the Religious Freedom Restoration Act with Rick Santorum when she was in the Senate. And I would also tell them, I'd say, you know, she also supports traditional marriage. She's against gay marriage. And they say, really? I say, yeah. And I could give quote after quote after quote, especially when she was senator in New York. And the liberals there were hounding her to change her position on marriage. And she kept saying, I'm sorry, but I just believe that historically and biblically and religiously, marriage is supposed to be between one man and one woman. She was uncompromising on that. And then she changed on this, and you look this up, she changed on this in the fall of 2012, right at the time of Barack Obama's reelection. And Obama had switched himself on same-sex marriage. If I have my dates right, it was March or May of 2012. He did so publicly in a national interview with Robin Roberts of ABC News. And Obama changed then and there. And I think Obama was doing that, I won't say for political purposes, because I think Obama actually always favored same-sex marriage. That's how radical Obama is, even going back to the 1990s in the Illinois State Senate. In fact, David Axelrod said exactly that Obama's always believed in same-sex marriage. So I think Obama always lied about it. Hillary, I think, she always supported, one man, one woman Christian marriage. And I believe that she changed in 2012. Well, I can't say for certain. Probably for a combination of political motivations in order to get the Democratic nomination for 2016, and possibly also because, like the rest of the Democratic Party and the liberal progressive movement, she evolved to that position. Maybe it's some combination of both. I can't say for sure. I can't look into her soul. But it's very notable, I think, and very telling that she changed right at 2012. And I don't know if you remember this, Todd, but she did a public video with the Human Rights Campaign, which is the largest LGBTQ group in the United States. It's the group that, will destroy your life if you stand in their way and disagree with them. If you're like a Christian florist or baker who doesn't want to service the same-sex wedding, they will steamroll you. But they did a series of videos where Hillary came out publicly in favor of same-sex marriage. And so that was right at 2012. The politics of it seemed very smelly.
A couple other questions. As you said, the occasion of our conversation has to do with a conversation reported with a Pastor Shilla Day of her acquaintance. And he had, if I'm reading the news accounts correctly, he had kind of given her daily devotions during her run for the presidency in 2016. And I think that some of the content of those actually found its way into the stump speeches of Hillary Clinton during that arduous campaign. It sounds like she is still someone who, even during the rigors of a campaign, someone who still kind of has a mind toward spiritual matters in a very secularized and very bare-knuckled process as a presidential campaign. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's probably true. I don't doubt that. I know that from all of my research indicated that she was really on her knees in the 1990s when her husband was making a complete fool of her in the White House, when he was chasing the interns around the Oval Office and doing things that we can't say on Christian radio with Monica Lewinsky. And that was a national humiliation for her. And with that, she kind of doubled down on her faith. You know, she went to God even more so in that time of trial, that time of crisis, as Bill made a fool out of her. She really went back to Philip Wogeman and other people. And so she returned to her faith during that time. And so I'd imagine during the harshness of the campaign, especially when you're running against somebody like Donald Trump, who you know, and I say this as a conservative Republican, Donald Trump is the ultimate male chauvinist pig. I mean, the guy is just, the things that the guy has said about women is horrific. And I think if Hillary would have lost the 2016 presidency to, a gentleman like Marco Rubio or, John Kasich, it wouldn't have been that bad. But to lose it to Donald Trump, of all things, to be denied the first female president by Trump, of all things, I think that probably really once again sent her back, fleeing to her faith on her knees. And so I would imagine that I could easily picture Shility sending her a daily verse, and I'm sure he did that anyway, and I can imagine her clicking it and reading it and giving it a quick read to sort of give her strength. Yeah, I find that very believable.
Since his name has come up, you've written books about George W. Bush and his spiritual life, Hillary Clinton, her spiritual life. You've looked into the lives and the histories of at least these two towering figures in American political life. If you cast an eye toward the White House right now, what would you, as an author of such books, how would you begin to talk about Donald Trump and God?
Oh, man. You want to just schedule another hour to do that one? This is, I'd say it's the most unconventional faith story that we've had in the presidency, but Barack Obama was pretty bad, too. Obama, by the second year of his presidency, even if that, was denominationless. I don't know that he ever joined a church. He was ever a member of one. I think maybe he left the United Church of Christ, and the United Church of Christ, he only came to it through the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Obama was really, really hard to pin down. But Trump, it can at least be said from what I know that as far as an identifiable denomination, I think he's PCUSA, Presbyterian Church USA. I think Melania's maybe a more interesting story. She seems more openly faithful than he does, even carrying a rosary at their wedding, which I think was in an Episcopal church. She's Slavic. She's from Slovenia. It's a very Catholic country. So we learned that when they visited the Vatican. Trump, I don't know if you saw this piece, really interesting piece in First Things by, I think it was Matthew Schmitz, on how Trump was a student of Norman Vincent Peale. And, the whole power of positive thinking. And, typical Trump fashion, Trump boasted, "I was his best student." kind of taking the logical conclusion, taking all of that to its logical conclusion. But he is, faith-wise, he's a lot harder to understand, to pin down. And I don't know. I with Donald Trump, I'm not exactly sure what to make of him. I can say that lately in his speeches, he has made more references to God. His national prayer breakfast talk, after he made some appalling comments about Arnold Schwarzenegger and praying for The Apprentice and a bunch of other crazy off-the-cuff stuff, once he actually read the script that was handed to him, that was written for him, he said some really nice things about his own faith. So there might be some improvement there. I don't know, but I know this. I think of Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln said about the presidency, "I'm often driven to my knees by the overwhelming conviction that I have nowhere else to go." Woodrow Wilson, Harry Truman, Ronald Reagan, they all said, "I can't imagine," George W. Bush, they said, "I can't imagine doing this job without faith in God. I don't know how you get through otherwise." And so with Trump, the biggest ego in the history of the presidency, we'll see if what gives there. Even with somebody with an ego like himself, I would think that he's got to be turning to God at some point. So we'll see. Time will tell with the Donald.
Dr. Paul Kengor is professor of political science at Grove City College and author of several books, including God and Hillary Clinton, A Spiritual Life. When you purchase it using the Amazon link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for God and Hillary Clinton by Dr. Paul Kengor. Dr. Kengor, thank you.
Oh, sure, Todd. Anytime. Call me anytime.
In hour two of Issues Etc. on this Friday, August the 25th, Pastor Chris Rose Bro joins us for a regular feature. This Week in Pop American Christianity, we will talk about solar eclipse prophecies. We'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, and we'll review the movie Annabelle Creation with Pastor Ted Giese. Stay tuned for hour two of Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for you and the divine service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.